Every startup begins with an ambitious founder and an idea, but what inspires them to take the leap into the entrepreneurial world? I'm Peter Jun Ho Sang, founder and CEO of Beyond Form, and welcome to our new founder series. I'll be sitting down with a few of our startup founders to hear about their journey as entrepreneurs in the fashion tech world. On today's episode, I'm sitting with Chelsea Vandekamp to talk about fashion repair, care, and everything aftercare. We'll be distilling insights from a research project that Chelsea has been conducting with the Beyond Form team over the past summer months. We'll be talking about what the aftercare category looks like in the USA, what's lacking for the consumer in terms of experience, and why there's huge business opportunities to be had still in the region.
And really understanding that there's so much frustration throughout that customer journey. It's just untapped potential to do something to make repair and rewear and the longevity of these items so much more exciting and a better experience.
Let's get stuck into Chelsea's research journey on this episode of Venturing Into Fashion Tech. How are you today, Chelsea?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Good to hear. I'm looking forward to today's conversation about clothing repair and care. But just to set the scene for our listeners into some context to what's happening in the space itself, the global clothing and footwear repair market size is expected to grow at a compound annual growth rate of 58.99%, reaching $659 million by 2027. That's according to 360 research reports. So it's growing at an exponential growth rate. So we're going to talk a little bit more about this later on. So what does this mean for brands specifically? Well, let's just take some use cases. So for example, Nudie, the Swedish jeans brand, repaired 65,386 pairs of jeans, resold 394 pairs, and collected nearly 21,000 jeans in the year 2022. So that's a huge number. Patagonia, the brand that's famous for being a little bit more ethical, has opened more than 70 repair centers around the world and has repaired more than 100,000 garments per year, which is a great initiative by that specific brand. So we're seeing brands are adopting this practice more and more in their business models. So in terms of demographics, Gen Z is repairing clothing more than any other age group, with 77% mending their clothes in the last 18 months, according to research by Penny's Island, which is very interesting to see that the younger demographic is actually repairing more than their older counterparts. And we're going to come into that a little bit later on. But first and foremost, Chelsea, let's hear a bit about you. Tell us a bit about your background and what led you to the interest in the startup ecosystem and repair space.
Yeah, absolutely. So it all really started from a young age, if I think back as to what has influenced me in being interested in the fashion industry. Growing up with a single mom in New Zealand, she sewed all of my clothes. And I'm telling you, these outfits were both amazing and insane at the same time. But I really got to understand and appreciate fashion from a young age. And as I got older, my mom really had an influence on me and really taught me to look for quality, look for classic, look for pieces that would transcend style or trends. So throughout college throughout my degree, I was working in retail and then eventually ended up at UGG Australia working on their global marketing. So it's really been a through line of my entire upbringing and into my early career up until I was working in the fashion footwear space and then have just continued to have a love for the industry.
And just for context of our listeners, you mentioned there that you're from New Zealand, but you're not currently based in New Zealand. You left the little small island for chasing the American dream. How did you end up in America?
Yeah, no, it's funny. I think it's when anyone comes from a small town or a small country, they always dream of going bigger and beyond, right? So, fresh out of college, I packed my bags, took a huge leap and just moved to California. And I've been here ever since and working my way down the coast of California. Now I'm in Orange County and it's been an amazing ride. It's very different to New Zealand, but a great place for the fashion industry, and it's really got a unique style and connection to fashion here, unlike anywhere else I've seen in the world.
When we're talking about repair and care, so you mentioned there a little bit about, you know, your childhood growing up. Has that translated into adulthood and specifically where you're living now?
Yeah, it definitely has. And, you know, I will say I've been on both sides of how consumers approach fashion, you know, and it's not surprising. In your early 20s, you know, you're new to the workforce, you're strapped for cash, and you still want to be cool as hell and follow all the trends. So fast fashion has had its place in my life, but it has been a struggle to really understand, what am I doing here? What is my personal style? How am I investing my money in fashion? And am I really making the right choices? And you're really starting to see that shift, especially here in California. People are starting to understand, you know, fashion trends are fleeting. There's something new, you know, every other week. Fast fashion has tapped into that and definitely capitalized off of it. But where's the end? Are we all just racing to the bottom and just creating this, you know, anxiety-ridden closet full of things you've never worn? Or is there a better way where we can really start to slow down and think about our relationship with the fashion that we buy and invest in, and what it means to us? So I'm definitely on that journey now. I feel like my closet has definitely condensed a lot. I am really meaningful about my purchases and how I care for my items, which is why I'm so interested in the aftercare space and how we can, you know, lengthen the lifespan of our most prized possessions.
And how does that feel? Did you just wake up one day and be like, I need to repair more of my clothing, more of my wardrobe, I need to stop spending money?
Yeah, I got out a trash bag and I was just like, I'm getting rid of half of this stuff. Like, it was just so overwhelming. And I do think there's a lot of people that feel that too, you know, where you just want to feel rid of the chaos of all of these things that you've just accumulated over the course of, you know, years. You haven't departed from them, but you've never worn them. So it was almost like a cleanse in a sense. And I just decided, I'm done. I need to be more mindful and just create what it is to be Chelsea through my wardrobe and through my style.
And just for the context for our listeners, the reason why you're obviously on our podcast shows that you have been working with us over the last few months on a research project specifically about aftercare, fashion repair and care and so forth, which obviously has been a journey for us because we have learned so much, which we'll talk about in a second. You mentioned there that you're living in California, but actually there seems to be still a lot of opportunity there. There's not necessarily that much happening. And, you know, you'll talk more about this in a second about the local mom and pop stores. But in terms of technology and fashion tech platforms, there's still so much opportunity there to be had in, not just actually in California, but around the world. I mentioned right at the start of this episode that it's going to be growing by nearly 60% compound annual growth rate, you know, between now and 2027, which is a massive number, which means that there needs to be more players coming onto the market. So from our research that we've done so far, what have you found that's really interested you?
Yeah, well, I mean, all of it has been so interesting. I think going into it, we had a lot of, you know, preconceived ideas that maybe, you know, were a little assumptive of the space and how consumers are currently thinking about repair and refurbishing luxury items. You know, you look around, especially uniquely to California, everywhere that offers shoe repair, it's usually offered as like an ancillary service on top of laundry or on top of dry cleaning. It's all mom and pop shops which have kind of been in the business for, you know, 10 to 20 to 25 years. It's very antiquated. And I think the thing that I initially was so interested in is, why is this huge industry so antiquated without any refreshing disruption, knowing that there are a lot of pain points? And so, you know, even just the work we've done in talking to a lot of consumers about how they think about aftercare, what's the journey they go through when they know they need something that needs repairing or resoling, and really understanding that there's so much frustration throughout that customer journey. It's just untapped potential to do something to make repair and rewear and the longevity of these items so much more exciting and a better experience. So from the beginning, I knew there was potential, but actually uncovering where the potential was really interesting. And it wasn't what I had assumed.
And obviously, we didn't know what to expect when we were first thinking about conducting these focus groups with people around in your area. We were like, is anyone actually going to turn up and give us things to look at as to what they want repairing? And lo and behold, people did actually turn up with tons of stuff. Like, what did they turn up with?
Yeah, I mean, it was a variety, and it was great because you really saw a full spectrum of where people need this kind of support. So anywhere from luxury goods, a lot of Louboutins, which was interesting. A little tidbit there as well. The majority of people who bought Louboutins, they all had the same issue, was that the heels are so skinny that they get stuck in escalators constantly and just completely chewed up and destroyed. Anything from high-end shoes and handbags to things that were sentimental, like grandmother's fur coat and, you know, things that they've had for a long time that just seem to be a really memorable piece of their experience, like a jacket that they bought on vacation that, you know, may not have been the most expensive jacket, but they've just worn season after season after season. So it was great to see the full spectrum of what people are looking for. And it really kind of reinforced the need for this kind of service.
So why aren't there more people looking after their garments in this, you know, obviously, if we're going back to 100 years ago, everyone was repairing and caring. But as you've alluded to, now that fast fashion is there, we don't necessarily need to do that. So why has everyone just suddenly stopped?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think for sure, fast fashion created this idea of disposable fashion. So, you know, if trends are so fleeting and so fast to come to market, what's the point in investing in this jacket knowing that in a season you're going to go for something new, a completely different style? You might not even know what it is, but you get into this rhythm of expecting something to be out of date very quickly. And so when that happens, why would you invest in a very expensive coat only to know you're going to wear it a season? And so that's where I really think there's a lot of potential with just shifting the paradigm about how we think about style and fashion. Do we need to keep up with all these trends and just continue to feed that engine? I don't know. I think with the emergence of some new styles like quiet luxury and turning more towards timeless classic styling is actually helping us get there as well. Because I think if you can find a wardrobe that works hard without having to be all things, you'll find that it's actually more economical to spend more on these items that will last from season to season. So, for example, you could buy an amazing high-quality Burberry coat, and you know that's going to last for 10, 12 years. And you know it's going to remain an icon style for that length of time as well. So things like looking at construction, looking actually at the investment long term and doing the girl math to justify the high ticket item actually ends up being a better investment in the long term. So I think we're getting there and we're taking small steps, but I think pairing that shift in mindset with some maintenance and aftercare service to support it is you know, a no-brainer.
Do you do a lot of girl math, Chelsea?
I do a lot of girl math. My husband hates it. But, you know, it is true. People laugh at me for trying to justify, you know, I'm going to spend $600 on this dress, but I've got three weddings, so it's $200 each. And then I can resell it for $400. So really, I'm making money, you know. But when you do the math and you do spend more mindfully and you can justify it that way, you are reducing your footprint, you're also maximizing your dollar, and it makes sense. So you don't need to go and buy a new dress for every wedding and then have it sit in your wardrobe and collect dust. So I'm all for supporting girl math.
So just going back to the OC, but you're based in California, because this is where predominantly a lot of the research has taken place. Whether it is a stereotype about everyone being into wellness, health, and the environment. So I'm just thinking along the line with Paltrow and Goop, for example, is it actually like that there? And what's it seem like for sustainable fashion and circular fashion?
Yeah, you know, the stereotype is real, but I will take it a little further and say it's a lot like a religion, honestly. It's ingrained in all of us. And to go deeper into that, I think when you live in a place like California, you feel like you need to do your part to really appreciate the place that you live in. You know, we live in such a beautiful spot. So the health and wellness part of it kind of lends itself really nicely to the overall lifestyle that's here. You know, it's always sunny, it's always shining, there's beaches everywhere. It's just part of the experience of living here. So, you know, part of the privilege of being in Southern California is that you really do take the time to make sure you're taking care of yourself, of your community, and it really does come through in a really stereotypical way. But it's really why the marketplace here is the way it is, you know. It's not as surface level as some may think as well. It really is, you know, things like aftercare and upcycling, doing more sustainable things with fashion is really part of the attitude that is like the Californian experience. People are looking to do their part. They're looking to make an impact. They're also looking at how they're, you know, contributing to, you know, the idyllic environment that we've created here. So it seems like a natural fit. Gwyneth is our, you know, leader in all of that. But you can see by her rise in popularity, it's really a lifestyle that has now become very aspirational.
Do you think there's definitely an opportunity there then from a business perspective?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there's a very specific California aesthetic and lifestyle that you probably see on TV. It's very cliche, but it is what it is. So I think there is a really huge opportunity here to support this kind of repair and resale movement, knowing that a lot of people are interested in fashion, interested in high-end fashion here. You have a lot of high-end markets, whether you're in Southern California, Beverly Hills, or in San Francisco, you have a lot of consumer bases that are perfect for this kind of experience and enhancing the experience of aftercare. Knowing that, you know, no one has done it right yet.
Where you're living, obviously, is quite a wealthy neighborhood. So I wouldn't necessarily say that money is an issue. Like, if they want to buy new things, they can do if they want to. So you're saying, actually, it's more of a lifestyle choice, mm-hmm. potentially, why they would do more repair and care. Because actually, the research that I mentioned right at the start with Penny's Island and the Gen Z repairing clothing more than any other age group, one of their drivers is, although they, yes, do care about the environment and sustainability. They just want to save money.
Yeah,
at the same time, and that's why they are repairing and caring. So I think it's interesting to see how the different demographics are taking different perspectives and approaches to the whole repair and care movement. Do you think in a perfect world that technology and sustainability could come together to solve fashion's overproduction and overconsumption issues? You know, the fact that in the industry, one third of clothing never gets sold, for example.
Going back to your earlier point, we do have, it's very funny, there are two very clear and seemingly opposing audiences that would be perfect for an aftercare solution. You know, the Gen Z, you know, that growth number is not surprising to me, because as you see, you know, platforms like The Real Real and Vestiaire Collection really booming within that audience, they are looking for more affordable ways to enter the luxury category. And you've seen a lot higher engagement with luxury brands like Gucci and Miu Miu recently with that younger demographic. So they're really trying to find ways to enjoy and be a part of that luxury fashion space. And that comes from resale. And when you go through resale, there's a point where you need to figure out, okay, what can I do to maximize the value of this item if I'm going to get the most bang for my buck and make this an investment item that I am going to resale or that I am going to purchase and take care of? Because you're right. I mean, on the other hand, there's the higher end buyer, and they have an excess amount of money that they can just buy the next thing. But I think where Gen Z comes in as an opportunity is we can actually help support them in that journey to obtaining their favorite Gucci bag or their resale items that we can then, you know, tailor to their needs or, you know, repair so they're getting that return on their investment. The higher end, which is definitely in my neighborhood, it's not me by any means, but they're just down the road. I think there's
I think everyone's going to be listening to this podcast episode and just imagining Chelsea in her fabulous mansion now.
No, gosh, I wish. I mean, fingers crossed, right? But
yeah,
no, I think the other demographic, you know, understanding their needs as well. Although they do have a lot more disposable income, it's very rare to find someone who is just going to toss out, you know, a Hermes and go for the next color. There is still this this sense of responsibility in taking care of their goods and making sure that things are well maintained and that they show up nicely and that, you know, shoes are going to actually be clean the next time they want to use them or repaired when they break. So I think when you think about the luxury sector specifically of goods, there is a need there as well just to maintain, although they're continuing to invest elsewhere as well.
So you mentioned that, Chelsea, The Real Real, and during your research process, I thought it was very interesting how a resale platform like The Real Real doesn't actually accept a majority of products if they don't meet their standards. Mm-hmm. What did you learn then?
Yes, I actually learned this firsthand myself when I tried to resell a pair of shoes that I had maybe worn once. They were in great condition, and they came back saying they were not accepted because they were dirty. And now I'm talking like a little bit of dust. Like, come on, guys, just pick up a cloth. This proves, you know, that there must be a lot of people out there who are just really trying to sell some of these things that they no longer need or want. And then they're kind of left thinking, well, shoot, what's my option now? I either have the burden of getting this repaired and fixed, especially to resubmit it and resell this, or I guess it goes to the back of my closet, or, you know, do you donate it? And there becomes a point where it's like you feel like you're at a crossroads of three seemingly not perfect options to take this item and give it back into the resale universe. So with that, I was thinking, you know, if the real can't pick up a cloth and just wipe off dust from a shoe, who's going to do that? Who can be that person to take that opportunity, handle it for the consumer? They no longer want to deal with it. And then you can do what it needs to get that back into the ecosystem and find its new family or, you know, buyer. So definitely an opportunity there. I think they're knowing how high their standards and rejection rates are. There's definitely work to be done to try and fill that need.
There's definitely space then, actually, just for platforms to be aligned and to unite and to work together to make, you know, fashion more sustainable. I think that's a great point that you make there, Chelsea, because if they're having such high rejection rates, it just means that a lot of this fashion is just going into the void.
Yeah.
And it's just sat there. Nothing's happening, which is only, although yes, the Real Reals, I guess, agenda is a positive one, so we can't knock that. It's still not necessarily doing enough to move the needle for fashion to become truly circular or truly sustainable. So I think in terms of fashion, technology, sustainability, it all coming together, what do you think that can do for the future of the industry? What's your vision there?
Yeah, you know, I'm so glad this is a hot topic right now within the industry, because knowing firsthand, you know, working at UGG and seeing the other side of fashion and the process from concept to retail, you know, being on the floor, there's a lot of waste and a lot of streamline opportunity through the entire supply chain. So there is absolutely a space for tech to help resolve some of those supply chain gaps and issues. A lot of companies are focusing on their internal supply chain, but with aftercare, it's almost like as soon as the item is purchased, it goes into a black box. No one knows what happens to it and no one wants to take accountability for it. So that scope 3 kind of work that can be done to help sustainability and create more circular economy is really interesting, which is, you know, we found a lot of great insight through the work that we've done together as well.
Yeah, I think we could talk for hours about this subject. We do have so much more insights to share, but obviously we can't make a podcast episode that is like hours long. Well, we could do, but I'm not sure everyone's going to listen right to the end. So I'm going to end the episode there, but I want to finish with a quick fire round of questions, Chelsea. So the first answer that comes to your head, are you ready?
Yes.
Last fashion item that you repaired?
Ooh, actually, you know what? Going back to the Louboutin example, it was my pair of Louboutins that I had caught in an escalator and I ate it in Vegas. It was very embarrassing. And not only painful then, but very painful afterwards having to get that fixed.
All in the name of research.
Yeah, exactly.
One item that brings nostalgia in your wardrobe and you want to repair forever.
Oh, okay. My mom, she gave me this beautiful green leather belt with a massive onyx belt buckle. It sounds hideous, but it's actually a dream. And that is something that I will forever get fixed and resized no matter what weight I am. That thing is staying with me forever.
One tip for people to be more sustainable with fashion.
Ooh, look at the contents of your fabric. I think a big thing is a tip from me is if you can find something that has majority organic material, so like 100% cotton or merino or cashmere, this is something that is going to last you. It is going to maintain its integrity longer, and you're just going to get a lot better wear out of it. Try and avoid any blends that have nylon or lycra and stuff in them. It's not going to end well.
I think that's such a good tip. I've always been obsessive with looking at clothing labels, but I think that's because I'm just trained in fashion. But a lot of people don't know what their clothes are made of. And actually, aside from it lasting longer, the more natural fibers it has, or 100%, as you're saying, actually, you can then recycle that. And it's also biodegradable as well. Those blends are just so difficult from a recycling perspective or from a, you know, biodegrading perspective. They're just really difficult to deal with.
Really difficult to deal with, and also terrible that they are really sweaty. They don't breathe.
Yeah, and they're disgusting to wear as well.
They're horrible to wear. So you're always going to go, you're never going to have an issue if the quality of the contents of your apparel is a high quality.
Favorite luxury brands that you think is truly being sustainable?
Ooh, I immediately think of Stella McCartney. She is doing a lot in the terms of aftercare. She's really honing in on how you can properly wash and, you know, maintain and look after your goods. You should definitely check her out. She's doing a lot called Clever Care, where she kind of takes you through how to create longevity out of specific fabrics and items. So she's doing a lot in that space.
Thank you so much for your time, Chelsea.
Thank you so much. I had a great one.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to click follow to keep up to date with the latest episodes. And if you like this episode, please give us a review. If you want us to feature a specific theme or guest, please give us a message at beyondform.io. I will see you very soon.